This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is Scott Richman
and Arnie Sherman.
You're listening to What Do You Know on News Talk KGVO, AM 1290 and 98.3 FM.
Arnie Sherman, a good Sunday morning. We're back.
We've been away for a couple of weeks. I've been away. You've been hard at work, but I've been traipsing around the world, you know, checking out different places, different locales. As long as I'm still mobile and have all my original body parts, I'm traveling like a maniac to make sure. Too many of my friends, and people that you know,
right?
You know, say I'm going to do all of these things when I retire or when the kids are all grown, and then something happens and you can't do it all. So I've just resolutely going to keep traveling until either one of my body parts fall apart or I can't get on a plane anymore. So it's been fun. I have, trips coming up, but I'm always happy to come back to Missoula. I'm always happy when I get off the plane.
Right, we have golf season.
It's golf season. Well, this is one of
this is the best time.
Unless you're a football fan, American football fan.
Right.
We're into the best sports season ever.
Agreed.
We have hockey playoffs. We have NBA playoffs. We have Major League Baseball.
Right.
We have Olympics coming up.
Yes.
We have golf every weekend. There's a golf tournament or something. Every other major sport is in full action at the same time, except for football. And football is going to have the draft coming up, so we're still going to have some football stuff going on.
So I thought about this. March, April, May, June, prime time for sports,
yeah,
right?
Totally. You had
a couple of weeks after the Super Bowl, and then you're into March Madness.
Right. You had the March Madness, and particularly with the women's tournament that drew more than the men's tournament. Caitlin Clark,
yep,
playing for Indiana.
Just great
stuff. That's outrageous, by the way. Did you see that the number one draft choice for the NBA last season had a $35 million, 4-year contract, and her 4-year contract is $835,000? I mean, it's outrageous. She draws as much of a crowd in the tournament, and
she's going to make it up in endorsements.
Yeah, well, she will, but not as much, not $35 million worth, I don't think.
Definitely not.
No, so, plus it's a time, every sport has its ups and downs, but in we just had the Masters, and you had all these other, 26-year-olds competing for the championship, which is, changing in the guard. Tiger was, 29, shot an 82 or something on the last round. Phil Mickelson sort of out of it. Bryson DeChambeau, who was the hot thing a few years ago, is 30 now. Is like almost,
he's an old man.
He's an old man now. These guys are young and
we're also
very
not
competitive.
Fans. We're not fans because he went to Liv.
Yeah, well, I'm not a big Liv fan. I don't like that.
Well, listen, I'm going to help you with your transition into our guest today.
Yeah,
so
good.
Springtime in Missoula is always marked by
the International Wildlife Film Festival.
Exactly.
Which is actually going on this very weekend, April 20th to 25th.
Right.
And also, for those who can't make it to that, terrific event, from the 28th of April to May 3rd, it's virtual.
Oh,
so you
wow.
can go online and see the 50 or 60 films.
Beautiful.
That are juried and competing in probably, arguably the best international wildlife film festival in the world.
Which is great.
And it's been here for 47 years. I'm sort of doing Mike Steinberg's interview. Our guest today is Mike Steinberg, who is the executive director of the non-for-profit Roxy Theater.
Right.
And the Wildlife Film Festival.
Right.
His record store. And he's a producer, director, choreographer, a cinematographer. I mean, he does everything.
Many hats he wears.
Yeah, he does a lot of jobs to stay here in Missoula.
And he's also from the Midwest, so we have so much to talk to him about.
Yeah, I'm excited to have him here. I'm excited to hear about the film festival. Some of those films have over the years have been fantastic.
Right.
And I'm anxious to hear about what we have in store this weekend.
Yeah, with Mike Steinberg. We will be right back after these words with our guest, return guest Mike Steinberg back after this. All right, Arnie, we are back with our guest Mike and Livia.
From the International Wildlife Film Festival, the Roxy Theater. We're going to find out more about Livia's background, but we know Mike from a previous show.
Absolutely.
You know, Michael is an acclaimed filmmaker, cinematographer, producer, director. I don't even know. Have you been in front of the camera, too?
Oh, unfortunately, yeah.
Yeah, he's been in front of the camera. He's had too films in the beloved Tribeca Film Festival in the past, right?
Well, I just sort of did the cinematography for that, but it was my wife's film, yeah.
So his wife has a film. I mean, this is a
multifaceted,
Let's say faceted. I'm sorry. I keep knocking you down, but
no.
I'll go with
Stop being so modest.
Self-deferential.
First family of film of Missoula. How about that?
Oh, good God.
Yes.
Okay, I like that.
Yeah,
I like that.
I'll go with that. That's really humble.
So before we talk about the film festival and the Roxy, give us, for our listeners who maybe don't remember the last show we did, tell them about your background.
Well, I don't know. I've been making films for about 30 years and been at the Roxy Theater now for the last 11 years.
Doesn't it seem like it's just yesterday?
It kind of does. I mean, you know, this time of year, as we get around at the film festival, this is also the time of year that I started working there 11 years ago. And I'm always reminded of the beginning of, you know, then it was just a film festival and we weren't doing community screenings or one-off, you know, repertory or whatever. None of that. It was just like once a year they do a film festival. And so at that point, 11 years ago, we kind of started this idea of community cinema in Missoula. And yeah, that seems like yesterday, but it has been 11 years that we've been.
And how does the film festival tie in with the Roxy Theater?
Well, you know, it's really kind of a critical event that we do every year. And it's always in April. It's sort of a mark of spring. You know, you see bluebirds and you see the film festival and you know it's – and you see it's snowing on an April morning and you know it's definitely spring in Missoula.
Exactly. And you migrated here from where?
I grew up in St. Louis, Missouri. And, yeah, I got out here in 98. And I want to say I never left, but I left, you know, a few times. I went to go teach and went, you know, traveling and whatever. But I originally came out in 1988 and was so blown away that I was like, I want to live there someday.
Yeah.
It took me 10 years to figure out how to get out here. But, you know.
Is Tony's on the Boulevard still in St. Louis?
Tony's, I was in St. Louis in January to see my family. I haven't been to, I mean, Tony's has got to be there.
Yeah, it's got to be. It's an institution,
right? The whole hill is changed dramatically, but there's so many. This is an Italian neighborhood that they call The Hill. And it's amazing restaurants and delis and markets.
In a previous life, I lived in University City and went to Blackberry Lane Elementary School.
Oh, dude, my dad lived in University City. He went to Delmar Harvard is where he went to grade school.
I only lived there for a very short time. Yeah. Tied into the era in movies when my dad was working for Universal Pictures, was running their office.
Oh, we've talked about that. That's right. Yeah. And then we lived in Olivet, and there was a big Universal and MCA building was there.
Right. That was the connection.
That's right. I remember that now. I was like,
Is this great?
Livia.
This is what we do here.
We don't want to leave you out of this conversation.
I'm here.
Of Jewish geography.
So tell us.
Jewish geography.
So tell us a little about your background.
So I'm originally from São Paulo, Brazil. And I moved to the United States in 2015 to go to grad school. I went to the UNC School of the Arts for my MFA in creative producing and started working in film festivals. I was not thinking about this as a career at all. I just started volunteering at film fests just because I loved watching films and talking about films and writing about films. And then I realized, I actually love programming more than being on set. And I've been doing this ever since. So, yeah.
And you saw her, found her, and thought...
Found her. Well, we have a colleague through the university and in the Wildlife Biology Department, Melinda Booth, who's really wonderful. And Melinda worked at Wild and Scenic for a number of years and worked with Livia. And we were looking for a guest programmer for this year. And I reached out to Melinda and said, do you know anybody who may be interested in doing this or would have a background in the programming? And she recommended Liv, and I called her. We had a half hour, 45-minute conversation. I was like, this is probably the person. And somehow, in the midst of her schedule, she's actually the festival director for Wild and Scenic, but in the process of that kind of wrapping up and IWFF ramping up, she was available and pulled it off, I think, exceptionally well.
Yeah, it was perfect timing, actually.
It didn't seem like it. I mean, it seemed like it was
crazy.
Great. Yeah. Pretty like a slice of just right timing, but mm-hmm. yeah.
So 47 years ago,
yeah.
This was the brainstorm of a University of Montana person.
Yes,
right?
A gentleman named Charles Junkle. Chuck Junkle.
Chuck, everybody knows him as Chuck.
Yeah.
And why Missoula for an international wildlife film festival?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he knew what he was getting into.
Right.
You know, Chuck was a bear biologist and taught at the university and was very concerned about the state of wildlife film and what that was doing to conservation and was doing to people's perception of animals. And, you know, there was a lot of there was a show called Mutual Omaha's Wild Kingdom.
Yeah, oh, sure. Yeah.
Marlon Perkins.
There's the guy, which was actually a St. Louis film. It was,
right, yeah,
it was produced there, strangely enough. But,
yeah.
You know, there was a lot of like fakery and camera trickery of, and also interaction with the animals that was, you know, would habituate the animals and put them in danger, and they're trying to make films, and it was just basically unethical approaches to making wildlife films. And so that was really Chuck's skin in the game, was that he wanted to see the industry change. And so he reached out to filmmakers and developed this this festival, which was very filmmaker friendly and brought them together with scientists so that they could bring kind of an ethical approach to making wildlife films.
Sure. So now fast forward 47 years, what does it look like now?
Oh, we don't do that anymore.
No.
Sasquatch. And,
right. Yeah, right. All AI generated animals, right?
Yeah, exactly. So exactly. It makes it real easy. You just press a button. No, it's, I mean, at its heart, it's very much the same festival. I mean, we're very filmmaker friendly. We're very interested in ethics and filmmaking, but also in, you know, in the sort of message of conservation that's at the heart of a lot of the wildlife films. Unfortunately, that message is increasingly that we're screwing up the planet.
Sure, right.
And, you know, that wasn't so much the case in the early kind of like observational films where they would, you know, point a camera in the Serengeti and you just see a lion do its thing.
Have you had a chance to go to see the Darren Aronofsky film about Earth at the Sphere?
I have not. In Vegas?
Yes, in Vegas.
Yeah. No, I haven't. I heard it's incredible, though.
I did too. And I'm just like, he just seems like the most unlikely person to do a film about the Earth.
But, yeah. Except that I think he definitely has that angle down.
I bet.
You saw a movie like Mother.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's about a dying planet, basically.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, not to bring you down, but I mean, I think that is the core of the film's. I mean, with that said, I mean, actually, we have a much more uplifting program than we've had in previous years. Just happenstance,
right? Good.
Is it really international? Where do the films come from?
They come from all over.
All over. And I just want to make sure that it's clear that we have the stories talking about how the planet is not doing good. But one of the things that we're definitely looking and you'll see in the lineup this year is like uplifting stories and people doing good, organizations that are trying to make sure that we preserve this for future generations and that we keep this planet wild and beautiful for everyone.
Beautiful. That's great.
Yeah.
Hey, Scott, I don't know why I'm reminded when we talk about the, you know, downers of that Mad magazine cover which were the one where they said, if you don't buy this magazine, we're going to shoot this dog.
Yeah, right.
So that was always a downer. I remember that from a long time ago. But we don't have those kind of films.
We don't. Yeah, no. That's, and also, we didn't go with that marketing campaign this year.
No.
Different approach. But no, I mean, Lee's not kidding. And you can really tell by the morale of our staff that, in general, the content of our festival is much more upbeat, much more uplifting. And again, it's stories. It's not like we're not like trying to greenwash this anyway. It's just like there's some people doing some extraordinary stuff.
Right. Sure.
So, and it's being documented.
So this is, you know, these aren't films that are going to end up running, you know, in you know, AMC theaters and all that sort of thing. It's not, they're not big money makers. What is the passion that drives, what do you have, 50 or 60 films in the film festival? What's the passion that drives the filmmakers to go out and try to raise the money and put it together and, you know, and the labors of love, the 60 labors of love, every year? What's the passion behind that?
Do you have any idea?
Leave, I don't know.
I think great question. Filmmakers, especially filmmakers who do this kind of things, they are activists themselves,
yeah.
right? So it's their way. And I mean, something that I truly believe is that cinema has the power to move minds and make people reflect and
right. sure.
And change the things some and learn. And I think one of the most powerful tools in our festival is like how the films make us learn something new. Every time that I'm watching a film that I think, oh, I know a lot about whales, I'm learning something new right?
But the nice thing is that these films, as specialized as they are, there are more outlets on streaming television, right? On television between Netflix and Hulu and then Nat Geo and Discovery. There's all these outlets for it that maybe didn't exist 10 years
That's
ago.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. Right? So do you, when you choose a film and you're curating the program, first of all, how are you finding the films? Second of all, what's the criteria for a film to make it into the festival, right? And then third, how involved are you after it, you know, it exhibits at the International Wildlife
or
Film
finding
Festival.
Distributors or any of that
right.
sort of
do you film. Help these guys find distributors? I mean, are you a connector for filmmakers to other outlets or other film festivals? So a lot of questions there.
A lot of questions. Yeah.
I mean, but you know, we
take them all one at a time.
We're very much part of the process. And,
good.
And you know, Artie's question of, you know, these films don't play at a big at a, you know, AMC or a big
right,
theater,
right.
you know, they're not getting wide distribution. Certainly there's the possibility that they might find a home on streaming outlets.
Mm.
But for a lot of filmmakers, the festival release is their theatrical release.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And if you think about just from your experience with movies, that model where it's like movies start in movie theaters and then they go to some version of home video or
right.
streaming or whatever. The technology's changed, obviously, but it used to be like, oh, and then it's you get the videotape, and then it's on ABC on Sunday night or whatever. But film festivals are very much a part of that process to get the films out there to audiences. The other, so that they can filmmakers can be there and get a response. I mean, where are you going to have that opportunity to see
sure.
how your audience deals with the film?
Plus, even your film festival, you know, is live the 20th to the 25th, but then you go virtual from April 28th to. May 3rd. So
right.
people who
second
can't
window.
Make it there, they can see
still
it.
Still have an opportunity.
Window.
And so filmmakers can use and do use the, you know, the fact that they've played at our festival, the laurels that they, you know, put on their
right.
webpage or their posters
sure.
or whatever, as a way to kind of push that film forward. You know, it's got this prestige because it played at these events or whatever. So it's very much a part of the process. And will that help them get to a distributor? Possibly. I mean, the reality is the industry is what it is, and
right.
there are people who are deciding, oh, this is what everybody wants.
What are the funding sources for films for this type of?
It's all over the place. I mean, there's foundations which support films depending on the subject matter. You know, that if it's an ocean film, maybe there's somebody in that, you know, a foundation in that world that wants mm-hmm. to, you know, further those causes. Individuals. I mean, you don't see so much the model like Hollywood Films where you invest in it. You know, for documentaries, because it's a pretty bad investment.
Right.
And I think people are aware of that. So.
Right.
What's the biggest commercial success you've seen in the last 11 years from the festival? Any film breakout so that it was, you know, got national exposure?
I mean, there's a film we had last year, which we were just talking about yesterday, called Deep Rising, which is about underwater mining,
mm-hmm.
Voiced by... Aquaman, what's his name?
Jason Momoa.
That guy. Nobody knows him.
He narrates that.
Yeah.
And that's had, I've noticed that it hasn't quite landed streaming-wise, but it had a huge theatrical release. I think it played in IMAX theaters.
Wow.
So, yeah.
That's a big deal.
And, you know, sometimes films, too, get retooled, and Disney was packaging Earth as a series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But was also a BBC series prior to that.
Well, it also could be the germ for the development of somebody sees this and wants to make a major film out of the kernel of the idea that was done in this festival.
Yeah.
So
what is the biggest success you think you've seen out of recent lineups? Putting you on the spot.
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not entirely sure. I think I thought about Deep Rising. We did play it at the festival at the Wild and Scenic when I was there.
as well. Oh, that mushroom movie. Did you guys play the mushroom movie? Fantastic Fungi?
No, but I don't know.
Did you hear about this thing?
No. Fantastic Fungi?
This thing was incredible. Yeah, it's a beautiful film, and it's like it's also mind-blowing in terms of its subject. Like, who knew that mushrooms were as important as they actually are?
Right.
And actually, we don't know. We don't know how important they are, but they're pretty damn important. And this thing became a huge success for art houses. I mean, it wasn't necessarily a mall theater type.
Right. But for,
for
the
Roxy's
around.
Everywhere. Yeah. And it was a huge success.
It's juried. Are there prizes they get besides just an award?
We hand out 11 award categories. So we have 11 categories and they all get awards.
So that's.
And we're actually releasing, this will be already.
Yes.
Yeah, everybody will know this already because we release who are the winners before the festival starts.
Oh, you do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. So that actually helps sell.
And how many attendees come? How many people show up for this?
Well, the festival at the Roxy, I mean, everything is at the Roxy,
Roxy
except for one event that's at the University of Montana in the UC Theater,
right,
which is a free event on Tuesday night. Everything else is at the Roxy, and over the week we'll have about, about 5,000 or 6,000 people through the turnstiles. We don't have turnstiles, as it turns out.
No,
but we need to get some. But we'll have about 5,000 or 6,000, and then meanwhile, all week long, at the university in that same theater, we have these matinee screenings for all the schools.
Right, it's fantastic.
All throughout MCPS and coming as far as Pablo and Arlie and all over the place.
The Roxy is the only movie theater I go to.
That's about 3,000 more kids.
Yes.
Mike,
I was going to say, the Roxy is the only movie theater I go to anymore.
Is that right?
Yes, it's true.
Well, thank you.
I'm a member.
It's fun. Great. Best popcorn.
Well, besides that, you curate the right kind of movies there. I mean, some of them overlap with but a lot of them don't, and they're movies I want to see.
Oh, cool.
You know, and I am of the age that I prefer seeing the movie the first time in a theater.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's just a bet. You know, I don't care. Home theaters never match what you can get by going and sitting down and you're not worried about the phone ringing or stopping something to go and get a. You're watching this movie from beginning to end the way the production team wanted it to be seen.
Do you go see the older films as well, the rep?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing too. I'm such a sucker to see a film that I've seen before with an audience on a big screen. You know, you could watch it on your.
Yeah, but it's not the same.
I was
thinking about that when I was driving here today, and I was watching a movie the other night that I said it should be at the Roxy because it's such a great movie. My Favorite Year.
Oh, with Peter O'Toole?
With Peter O'Toole. He was nominated for one of his 7 Academy Awards for that.
Yeah.
You know, it was a takeoff of the old Sid Caesar.
Show of Shows.
Shows with Joseph Bologna.
Yeah.
It had a 97 Rotten Tomatoes. It's
a great movie.
It's a great movie. It captures the 50s and the early days of TV really well. Bill Macy is in it. It's got
who's
a really great cast.
Who's the guy who plays the Sid Caesar guy?
It's Joseph Bologna.
Oh, is it Joseph?
Yeah,
okay,
Do you ever see this movie, My Favorite Year? It's just a fantastic movie.
I don't remember,
movie.
Maybe.
But it's the kind of movie you should see in a movie theater.
That's so funny. Loosely connected.
Yes.
I was just watching the kids in the hall.
Yeah.
Because my daughter was like, what's that all about?
We
watched the first few episodes. And I didn't realize that the kids in the hall is a Sid Caesar joke.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
Yes.
Yeah.
I didn't know
every
that.
Time a joke would bomb on the Sid Caesar show, he'd say, oh, I got that one from the kids,
in the hall.
Yeah.
You know, and this is and the show it was a parody of the Sid Caesar show, which was, you know, in the early days of TV, these were all live shows. And, you know, they had just sort of like the way Saturday Night Live is now, pretty much. It's the only one left, right?
Yeah, sure.
You know, and
I think it's important when we first started speaking to Mike, this was years ago, the Roxy had just been renovated, it had just been reopened, et cetera.
Yeah.
Now, let's fast forward. Have you achieved everything you plan to achieve with the Roxy in terms of the facility from a programming perspective? You know, like let's take a victory lap here.
Sure.
I mean, it's an impressive place.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
I hesitate to say I've achieved everything because there's a
right.
You know, the reality is that nonprofits were started as a way to solve problems. And if the problem is making the world a better place, their mission, you know, making the world a better place through movies and community and culture, you know, like our mission, I don't think we've solved that problem just yet.
Right.
We've helped. So in terms of mission accomplishment, not quite. And there's a couple of things like There's a few improvements at the theater that we'd like to do. I mean, yes, we have this marquee that we put in 8 years ago, which is gorgeous, and new seating and new projection. And, you know, and then the weird random things, like we have a movie garden now because of COVID, and we have the little annex next door.
Right. But,
there's a few improvements that are under wraps right now that I know are going to happen. But there's also a pretty big deal, which is that we want the Roxy to be fully owned outright by the organization. We have a mortgage at this point, and we will probably be going public in the next year or so to
fundraiser
that thing off.
Yeah,
and
that'd
just
be great.
Like, it's the community's now, and there's not, you know.
That's great.
That.
Well, it's got a rich history for Missoula.
Yeah.
And you've, you know, made it, you contemporized it, but you kept enough of the connections that anybody that's been here for a long time could feel this is, you know, this is a anchor. You know, it's an anchor in the city.
As it
the
is.
City grows and changes, the Roxy is right there, sort of at the heart of it all.
I almost wish it was a bigger Roxy because you could always go to AMC to see those.
I don't
want to.
I mean, for me,
I like it
the way it is. It's a community theater.
Well, what would you do to improve it? What would you do if you had your druthers?
Oh God!
You want more space?
Well, sure, always more space. I mean, because you know, as we look at like our annual budget. Our limitations are just what it is. We have these
space.
You have these number of seats.
Screens.
We have this
have
many popcorns
screens.
We can sell in a night. I mean, it would be really cool to have one bigger room. But then, how often do we need during film festivals? We'd love to fill up a 500.
Right, but you've made up for that by using the university facility.
Honestly,
there's
like there's very little I would change about the Roxy. I put a basement in the Roxy because we have no storage.
Yeah,
but
that's
insane. Nobody can do that.
Well, you could take take one of the buildings on the street when they finally go out, you know, a tuxedo shop or something. You could become your storage.
Make it our storage.
Yeah.
Well, by the way,
not.
There's more storage facilities in Missoula popping up every day.
Yeah.
But, right?
If we could just put those boxes downstairs and get them out of the way, wouldn't that be nice? Instead of under the stage or wherever.
You're in a highly dense neighborhood.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
I don't know. I don't really – I'm not trying to be cagey at all. I just – nothing comes to mind. It's like I mean,
enjoy
when we think about where it was 11 years ago and the kind of improvements we've been able to make, I'm just so proud of the
let me focus on this for a second.
Yeah,
you're programming for the Roxy. You have revivals of older movies to show again in the theater.
Yeah,
you have the new things that are some of them are mainstreams, like Poor Things was playing in your theater as well as the AMC at the same time.
Yeah,
you have more arty films. Is there enough content out there? Or maybe a better question is the content after COVID good enough to keep people interested in coming into the theater?
Well, it's a good question, and I wish I knew that for the answer for the future. I can tell you that there is clearly a time in the Roxy's history which is BB and AB. Before Barbie and after Barbie.
Right.
Oh, wow.
Because the impact that film made on our theater was ginormous. It's the highest grossing film we've ever had, as is the case for probably many theaters that showed it. But it also ushered in this return of an audience that we started back 2 years prior, right? It was 21 when we reopened. And it was like, okay, a couple little hits, a few things here and there. But it wasn't until July of last year with Oppenheimer as well. I won't, dismiss that. I like Barbie more, but whatever.
I like Barbie more too.
It's a better movie. It's actually a better
Greta
movie.
Greta Gerwig did an unbelievable job.
She's a better
job.
Filmmaker, period.
Yes, yes.
And I'll fight anybody.
And I have to say, I know this may be controversial.
Christopher Nolan.
I actually, the Leonard Bernstein movie.
I loved Maestro.
Maestro
and
was
I thought,
incredible.
And I thought Bradley Cooper did an amazing
job.
He did.
Yeah.
I mean, I know, Cillian Murphy's everybody.
He's a fine actor.
He's a fine actor, and that was
a crap script. I mean, it's not a good script. It's like
he had a fairly narrow range of emotion in that particular character.
Yeah.
And it was you didn't know what it was supposed he was supposed to be because
Florence.
He was an unknown quantity.
She was good.
To try to replicate, Leonard Bernstein.
No, beautiful.
The way
I was
did.
Concerned. I was like, oh, he's going to wear a nose. I'm like, great. But it didn't distract.
Not at all.
And
his conducting scene was
brilliant.
I mean, I remember as a kid watching on Sunday, Leonard Bernstein conducting the Philharmonic for children.
Yeah.
And in the sweater, just the way it was. And he just had it down so perfect.
That scene in the church is unbelievable.
Yeah, I hate to say it. Have you seen Maestro?
Oh, yeah. I saw it on TV. But I hate to say it, but these films, right? It's where you see a film that shapes your perception and your feeling about the film.
Well, if you saw it in a movie, if you saw it on an airplane, if a plane flight, it's not going to have the same effect.
Well, I saw Barbie on a plane and couldn't watch it. I saw Oppenheimer on a plane and could watch it.
Well, why?
Which is odd.
Why could you watch that more?
I don't know.
That's weird.
I don't know. And then I saw Maestro at home, and you know what? I couldn't keep up with the audio, the dialogue. It's just, and it was dark. And this is an interesting thing happening with films. It's almost like seeing
it. It didn't have anybody getting killed. Sylvester Stallone wasn't coming across the screen. There wasn't a New York Rangers or the Knicks or anything. I understand. But it was a New York film.
It was a very New York film.
It was.
That parade scene, unbelievable.
That was
amazing. I know what you didn't like about it, which is, you know, he took the risk of having the overlapping dialogue between him and, you know, and
Maestro.
Like this interview right now.
Right, exactly. The way it really is. By the way, let's do an ID.
Our guests are Mike Steinberg and Lee from the IWFF and the Roxy Theater.
You know,
ID.
If you pay attention, you know, if you pay attention to film, it's interesting to hear about a project that's coming along and then see it and see if it actually actualizes what it was intended to do.
Sure.
So, for example, they're now going to do a movie about Frank Sinatra.
And who's Frank Sinatra?
And Scorsese is directing.
Well, wait, sorry about that.
Was that a Sinatra song I just heard?
No.
Yeah. Succession.
Strangers in the Night.
I know, yeah. Fly me
to
the
moon. Wait, who's playing Sinatra?
You're not going to believe this.
Wait, you know the answer?
I know the answer.
Wait, hold off then. Who's playing Sinatra? Is it the kid who played Elvis?
No.
Butler, whatever?
Austin Butler.
Wait, what year is this set?
You know? It's going to set when he is in the relationship in his second marriage with Ava Gardner.
Okay.
Mark Anthony?
Mark.
Looks like a really young Sinatra.
So Sinatra's like 40, right?
Steve Buscemi?
40. Oh, no!
Don Cheadle.
Don Cheadle's playing Sammy Davis Jr.,
born to play Sammy.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Who?
He's such a method actor. He's going to have
one
of his eyes
removed. I'll tell you who's playing Jennifer Gardner. Jennifer Lawrence. Jennifer J-Lo.
Oh, okay. So is it
Jennifer Lawrence?
Is it Sam Rockwell?
No.
Oh, Sam Rockwell
would
good
be
guess.
Great.
He would be great. He's so eclectic.
Someone said Sam Rockwell should play in the biopic. Who should he play? There was another biopic they're thinking of. Well, Sam Rockwell.
So you got Jennifer Lawrence playing Ava Gardner.
Wilder. He could play Gene Wilder. Right.
And I can see Jennifer Lawrence doing that because she was very volatile in American, you know, the what was it? American Gigolo?
Yeah.
Yes.
No, American Hustle.
American Hustle. She got very – so she could play the fiery Ava Gardner.
Sure.
Sorry, Leave. This is we're going on a weird
thing. That's
what happens when you get three
Jews
old.
Say, three Jews in a room.
You're
forget
not gonna
it.
Not going to believe this.
The name of the show is Kids.
Leonardo DiCaprio.
No.
Yes.
Really?
He signed on for it.
That's disappointing.
To play him 30 years ago or what?
Play him in his 40s.
The only thing he has in common with Frankie is his womanizing and going after –
Well, he doesn't sing that I know of.
Oh, this is going to be
weird.
It's weird as when I heard Timothy Chalamet's playing Bob Dylan.
Have you seen the pictures, though?
He looks great. He looks great.
Prosthetic. He does look great.
This is the movie, though, this Dylan movie is like, I thought the whole thing is like Dylan goes electric, right? That's what it's all about, and Pete Seeger comes out and chops the cable.
That's
the context of the movie.
Right.
It's all like that.
Right, from the train.
And I was like, that's a movie? Like,
yeah, it's not enough.
You can't do that? Anyway. But Chalamet looks awesome as Dylan.
I haven't seen pictures.
I actually saw him on a plane, the flight at Willy Wonka, and he was very good.
Was he dressed as Willy Wonka?
Yes, he was. No, he was on the plane dressed as Willy Wonka. He was singing the song.
Gobstoppers.
Yeah, you know, and then what's his name showed up and playing Sammy Davis Jr. singing Candyman. You know, it was all a crazy dream.
You were just
let's get back to the.
Wait, I want
to
ask
some kind of sedative.
Arnie, we always ask these questions of our guests. Lee, you've been here for how long? How long have you been in Missoula?
3 weeks.
That's it. But so, where are you going after you're staying here, right? Or you're leaving?
She went to school here. Yeah. This is not the first three weeks you ever.
No, this is my first time ever in Missoula.
3 weeks?
Yeah, 3 weeks.
What do you think of our fair city?
Oh, I love
the Garden City.
Besides the snow after it was 70 degrees.
I mean, what are you making of that? I love the snow. I'm a Brazilian. I was like shooting and sending pictures home. All right. And like, it's snowing. Video.
Is this your first time in Montana?
I've been to Yellowstone 7 years ago. So yes and no.
Where did you come before you got here? Where were you?
I was in California. So
whereabouts?
In Nevada City. Because I was the festival director for the Wild and Scenic Film Fest.
Oh, is that where Wild and Scenic was?
Yes.
Okay.
Nevada City.
Near is that near Reno?
Near the Lake Tahoe, like Tahoe, hour from Tahoe.
Got it.
But we are actually moving cross-country to New York. So we decided to
What for?
And,
so boring there.
Right? No. Yeah.
Before
Why are you going to New York? New York City?
New York City.
Whereabouts? Mm-hmm. Where are you going to live?
We don't know yet. We're still
Who's
looking.
The
so, my husband and I. So he's here with me, and he was working
Bruno, he's
remote.
The best.
Yeah.
What does Bruno do? Is he involved in the industry?
No. He's like a finance guy.
He can work anywhere.
He's a completely different entity. Yeah.
So you're going to New York?
Yes. So he was called back to the office, and then we have to go.
Okay.
Back to the city.
But we're sending her with. Breadcrumbs.
So she can find her way back?
Yeah.
By the way, one last thing before we go back to the Wildlife Film Festival.
Yes.
They're doing a movie about Reagan, and there's a prominent role in it for Frank Sinatra. And in that movie, Sinatra is going to be played by Scott Stapp from Creed.
No.
From the band Creed?
Yes, what? The lead singer from the band Creed.
Sorry, Lee.
So interesting. Wait,
who's playing Distraction?
I don't know who's playing Ray, but that was a big deal because they were talking about Leo DiCaprio
and
then Scott Stapp playing him.
That's a real...
Reagan. Oh, you know who could do Reagan is Josh Brolin would be a good Reagan.
Well, he already played W in the other movie, right?
Oh, right, of course.
Oh, yeah, he did. Yeah.
He's going to play all the Republicans.
They're all related, yeah.
They're all related. No, it's kind of a weird combination of things, right? These people playing these kind of odd roles. I always thought Michael Bublé would play him in something.
Would play Reagan?
No, Sinatra or whatever. Reagan. Yeah, or something like that.
Yeah, funny.
But anyway, let's go back to the Wildlife Film Festival. So tell us the schedule. Tell us the schedule about it.
Was there a segue? There was a perfect segue.
There is. Time segue. We want to get back to the purpose of you being here.
Always. So we start with the Wild Walk and Wild Fest on Saturday.
Right.
And this has been happening for many, many years.
That's over 20. That's nearly 30 years.
Right.
Nice.
And I'm really excited.
Parade.
You sold me when, we have this parade and you can be in costumes. And so.
It's pretty cool.
That'll be fun.
Yeah, we're very excited. And then at 2 p.m. start the screenings. And we have screenings from Saturday through Thursday next week. And then we play the Best of Fest on Saturday, the 27th, and from the 28th to the May 3rd, we have the films virtually.
The virtual, which is great. Mm-hmm. Is that a big trend post-COVID where people are having more virtual film festivals?
Yeah, so, taking it back 4 years when the pandemic hit, we were finalizing all of our plans in, mid-March for the festival, which would have been in April. And, initially when we closed the Roxy, I mean, I remember telling people, we're going to be closed for a week. we just took the program off for a week. And I was like, oh, geez.
It's a long week.
And then it was clear after a couple of weeks, like, we're not going to be able to have this event. Nobody's traveling. Things are different than we ever thought they could be. And so Carrie Richet, who was our festival director back then, just whipped together the most amazing virtual fest before there was even any kind of infrastructure to do that.
Mm.
Today, there are these cool platforms that have popped up. Eventive is one, for example, that we've used for the last couple of years. But Carrie just figured it out. She was like, it's a Wildlife Film Fest. We'll give people Vimeo links and ask them for donations is how we did it. And we made a ton of money.
Bootstraps,
That was extremely instrumental to keeping us going in that process. So, but now there's a means to do it that's much more straightforward, and you buy a pass and you watch the films at home or whatever. And really your question, though, is that I think it's a thing and it's just with us. And the really cool thing that first year, there was a movie about a wolf in Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
And we played the film at the festival virtually because, of course, that was, we were
right.
shut down.
In 2020.
And the audience that came out for that film, I should say, stayed home for that film.
Right, right.
But supported it.
In Vancouver, in BC, was enormous.
Wow. Crazy. That's cool. That's very cool.
And so we found it, like, reaching audiences that we never would have with films.
And this can happen with this as well.
I think so,
because you can go virtual. So after, so that was, the walk is on Saturday. Tell us about Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday.
So what kind of films? What are you excited about?
Yeah, what are you excited about?
Oh my gosh, it's really hard to decide what are my favorite films, because you can't, I love basically
Are you
going to
see all 60 of them? No, you can't.
Oh, we have 74.
74 films?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
I got to come. Arnie, next week we'll go.
Yeah, we should go.
We have 17 feature films, 6 short blocks, and 4 feature and shorts playing.
Wow.
What's the most unusual one, do you think? Is there one that's cut differently from what you usually see?
Lynx Man, which is one of my favorite films this year.
Yeah.
And it's a film from Finland. And it's about this guy who, it's like a wildlife conservation film, but in a very artistic and experimental way, where he puts a mask of like lynx. So he's wanting to call the attention for the lynx, and lynxes that have been like killed.
You were thinking
area.
Lynx, not lynx, L-I-N-K-S, right? The lynx.
Not animal. The missing lynx, link, but the lynx.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Got it.
I said no Sasquatch movies.
No, yeah, I know.
Yeah. Bigfoot.
Right. But yeah, it's a very different and well, we can say this already because will know. It's the award winning for our new vision category, actually.
That's wow. Cool.
So yeah, cool. The judges were just like blown away by the cinematography and the way the storytelling. It's a very unique film.
Do you often find that the foreign cinematographers have a better take on things, or are they more craft oriented than our American colleagues?
Well, I think particularly when I've seen a tendency when someone's coming from somewhere else and shooting a place. So in the case of films shot in North America, sure. Right. If they're a European filmmaker or a Asian filmmaker,
Asian, right.
They might have a perspective and a view that's different. But I bet that's true of I think that's true also of films that are set elsewhere, shot by American filmmakers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking of like. Not necessarily a documentary, but Lost in Translation.
Right? Right.
Sofia Coppola has a beautiful view of Japan.
Right. It was a totally.
And meanwhile, like Robbie Mueller, who shot for Wim Wenders for years, Paris, Texas, for example.
Right.
Like that's America. That's incredible.
Yeah. From a like German you've never seen it before. Yeah, yeah. From a German perspective.
Absolutely. I think there's a history of that, and I think it's true of wildlife films as well. You go somewhere new and you're seeing something that maybe the people who were there before you. Didn't see because they were used to it,
What was your favorite movie this past year?
Me?
Yeah, that you saw.
Poor Things was way
That's
up there.
That's what I
love that movie.
I thought it was amazing. And the person I thought that was most underrated in that is...
Willem Dafoe?
Willem Dafoe.
Yeah. Friend or Dafoe?
He was...
Friend.
Yeah. He is unbelievable.
Yeah, he's great. He's great. No, I love that movie and I love his... Actually,
I didn't see it. I'm going to see it.
It's wonderful and weird.
It's wonderful and weird and it's original and it's...
It's Barbie.
Yeah.
It's like steampunk Barbie.
Yeah. Totally. I mean, it captures... You've seen the 2 or 3 concepts before. I was thinking of Island of Dr. Moreau.
Yeah, sure.
Right? You know, and Frankenstein. But the way it was done, it was just...
Yeah, it's stunning.
So refreshing
that
it was riveting. And her performance, obviously, Emma Stone was amazing.
Unreal. What about you? What was your favorite movie?
Yeah.
I think Happy Days. What's the... Wenders?
Perfect Days.
Perfect Days. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, yes. Who saw that? I haven't seen
that. Oh, my God.
It's beautiful.
Oh, it's beautiful.
I have a good Wim Wenders story.
Yeah, I love those kinds of stories. Just simple. Simple script. Not a lot of characters, and
he was up for an award.
I was
for best foreign film.
Right. Yeah,
mm-hmm. I was going to say if you're going to bring back some foreign films into the Roxy, I always like Lena Wertmüller's movies.
We showed
which one?
Beauties. What is it? 500 Beauties? Is that her?
Was that hers?
That many beauties?
Yeah.
Is that what it is? 500?
Yeah, I think it's 500 beauties.
Yeah, we just showed that in
that whole sequence
October.
That she did at one time, which was 3 of them that were all connected to each other, were just phenomenal.
Yeah, really, definitely unsung. Well, we've got Truffaut next month.
Well, that's
a whole series of.
I was going to say, with Leave here, we'd be remiss, but if not asking the question, tell us about the Brazilian film scene.
Yeah, what's going on?
Yeah, what's going on? Who are some of the great directors, filmmakers there that we should be aware of? Here in the United States. Put you on the spot.
Oh my gosh, I'm blanking.
Are you blanking on filmmakers?
Do you have a favorite Brazilian movie that you would share with our listeners that they should see?
I really love, I mean, it's so cliche, but City of God.
Well,
it's
City of God, I mean, but a lot of people haven't seen City of God.
Yeah. I haven't.
You've never seen City of God?
Yeah, no.
It's incredible.
No, so you have to watch it.
Then you've made a great recommendation to me and my listeners.
Did you ever see Favela Rising? It's a documentary.
I don't remember if I watched it or not.
Yeah, it was made after City of God, but he employs some of the same techniques, like visually cross-processing. Yeah, really, really super rich, really good.
What's interesting is, talking about the International Wildlife Film Festival, when you talk about how it has changed over time and, you know, what it's contributed to, you know, over the years, things like understanding of the role of bees in the community or whales or whatever. You know, there's a generation now who were born after, 1990s, who have never seen. I talked to my nieces and nephews. They've never seen some of the great movies because with all of the media outlets and on demand, you can pick exactly what you want, and you're not – it's not like the old days where it was on, or there's only two theaters in town. If you want to see a movie, you went there, and so you got exposed to more things.
Right.
I mean, now you don't. I don't know how you get to how you get.
I don't know either.
And
I try to resist being a curmudgeon about it, but I'm like, if you don't make some effort to do something, it doesn't feel like you're really, really doing it.
So right.
Sometimes because of the way technology works for us, it just comes to you. And you're like, oh, that's a thing that exists, but. I mean, again, not to be an old man, but I'm of the time where it's like physical media. You go out to the place, the bookstore, the record store, the video store, and some fellow nerd insults you or gives you recommendations or whatever, and that's how you learn about stuff. And I guess the internet is that, just amplified. But going to the place, going to the movie theater, being with the people watching it together – I mean, I just feel like that's what the experience is.
Yeah, and you have to do it. I mean,
I'm glad we're keeping it alive, and it's
true
that people like it.
So when we think about film, we also think about the soundtrack, the film, the music under the film. What has surprised you, captured you this year with the film slate you have musically? Anything that really just stands out?
We have actually a Note for Nature, which is a film set in Ireland with musicians. It's a very interdisciplinary, and they go to the landscapes, and they're all activists trying to preserve this beautiful landscapes in Ireland. And there is an orchestra, some singing musicians, and it's a beautiful and very unique kind of film. So it seems that you're going to a concert, but you're actually in a movie.
And the name of that film is, again?
A Note for Nature.
A Note for Nature.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, music is very important, sort of the soundtrack of your life, but it also heightens the experience in almost any movie if you got the right soundtrack matched up with
absolutely.
The right
movie. Some of the great...
Yeah.
That beautiful tree film that we're showing...
Giants Rising.
Yeah. The score on that's pretty amazing, too.
Oh, cool. And we will be right back after these words. All right, Arnie, we are back with Leave and Mike Steinberg.
Leave, how do we find out about everything you need to know about going to the film festival? And then how do they log into the virtual if they can't make it?
So they can go to our website, wildlifefilms.org. Or they can go to the Roxy, the Roxy website, or if they're just old school, they can come to the theater and the box office will help them find tickets as well. And if people want to watch it online, they can go to our website, and there is a link to go to Eventive, which is our platform.
What does a ticket cost? What does a film cost?
A single ticket costs $20 for the in-person.
$10.
No, the 20.
Movie ticket?
$10. Oh, so I'm talking about, finished another festival.
That's okay.
$10.
Take that, yeah. Take that question. We're giving Missoula prices, not these California prices.
So $10 a ticket.
California prices.
Yeah, $10.
Per film. Good.
Yeah. And then there's discounts. If you're a Roxy member, you get discounts.
Got it.
And
if you're watching it virtually, do you have to pay to watch it virtually?
Yes. Yeah. Pay for a pass on Eventive.
Perfect. And what does that cost?
Which is $100.
Perfect.
Yeah.
And they have access to a bunch of films. And we also have single tickets.
Single tickets mm-hmm, virtual available. As well. Got Maybe it. You just yeah. missed one thing. You want to catch it.
Right.
You know.
Perfect.
This is great, you guys. This is a good freewheeling conversation.
This is the kind we love.
Have to drag some of your guests through conversations sometimes?
Sometimes.
Yeah. Sometimes. No, come on, you can be honest. Nobody's going to tell
this
anybody.
The other thing is we're both interested in the genre, right?
So sure.
This is not, you know, talking about, you know, concrete manufacturing or something.
Do you have
like
a lot of those guests?
We have a few.
Yet again.
This is more to our heart.
Bob's here from the concrete plant.
Yes.
Here in Drummond.
Yeah, tell us how you grow apples.
Well, we just sit and watch them grow.
Yeah. We look at them. Anyway, this has been a spirited conversation. Thank you. It was a delight to have you both. Arnie, I'll see you next Sunday.
Next week, Scott.
See you then.
Thank you for listening to What Do You Know?
I can't wait for the next show, Scott.
I'm excited too, Arnie. If you'd like to suggest a guest, send me an email at scottrichman@townsquaremedia.com. We'll see you next week. And thanks for listening to News Talk KGVO.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.